Billing, left-hand side now. Anthony inside the left corner of the penalty. Plays it back to Phil Billing, who smashes it into the back of the net. And Phil Billing scores for the third successive game, right in front of those travelling Bournemouth fans who are loving their day out in the East Midlands so far. Billing, the Cherries goal machine. It's Forest 1, Cherries 2.
Good morning, welcome to episode 129 of Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast. My name's Sam Davis, hope you're doing all right this Monday, and that it's a weekend where Cherries fans across the UK, across the globe, can gloat in the fact that we're top of the league. I mean, albeit joint top of the league, but look, we notched our first 3 points of the season away at Nottingham Forest, and on this podcast, I'm going to be joined by Tom Jordan and Neil Dawson to dissect the match. All of us were at the game, so we can give you a bit of horse's mouth opinion of what it was like at the City Ground. Now, before we move on, just want to say thank you so much for all the comments we received for our coverage of the weekend's game. And it included a pre-match free-for-all on the YouTube channel on Friday, followed by a live reaction show that was outside the stadium as Boscombe fans emerged from the City Ground jubilant after seeing our 2-1 win. Plus, you may have caught our vlog that we released on Sunday morning. We dropped it about 7:30 a.m. and that clocked up a load of views. Thanks so much for your comments. And look, I mean, vlogging is, it's certainly not something that comes natural to me, I've got to say. I'm a person who just wants to enjoy a match day, right? But it's clear that reaction to the videos is really positive, especially for those who are unable to attend. So they get a taster of what it's like an away day, a home match. And we try to make it discreet as possible with our brand new camera, which is funded by you guys. So thanks very much. And what that does, that camera actually helps me to enjoy the game a little bit more, so I don't feel like a bit of a tourist. But if you want to support the channel, I'll tell you what, we've got a Legends wall and there are some monthly donators, and for you guys, we're eternally grateful. If you want to donate, it's afcbpodcast.com/coffee. And people who donate monthly, it just kind of, it emphasises that you're putting a trust in Back of the Net by parting with a fee every month of your choice, with which we pay for our StreamYard, which is the YouTube software, graphical software, podcast hosting, website hosting, and a lot more besides. So thank you so much for that. Honest to God, we really do appreciate it. Right, we've done the housekeeping. We need to talk about Forest, don't we? Boscombe, 2-1 win, our first ever win at the City Ground. Myself, Neil and Tom, we better talk you through it, hadn't we? Firstly, though, we need to get chatting to the panel. And it's a trio today, and it's myself. With me is Tom Jordan. Tom, you all right?
Very well, mate.
Good. We've also got Neil Dawson here as well. Neil, how are you?
All the better for yesterday. I haven't got yesterday's kit, so I managed to dig a T-shirt out that's the same colour.
Brilliant. And what's it like with this fame, Neil? You were just telling me off air about all these people approaching you. What's going on?
Yeah, people come out the ground saying they recognise me from this. I can believe it. So, I'm available for selfies.
Yeah, and Tom, apparently you had a selfie or two, didn't you?
I did, yeah. It's really nice because you feel like we've been like doing this for a while, but we haven't been in the stadium, have we? With so many fans. So it's weird, but really nice, all positive comments stuff from people, which is just great. So it's really enjoyable, and it was great to be back on the away day, to be honest.
And you know, it's clear, well, we need to make it clear, Tom, that we're just regular guys. We're just normal guys that have got normal lives, you know.
It's tough sometimes, you know. It's tough, you know, there's people everywhere go, oh, you know, just I know it must be difficult, but you know, just keep doing what you're doing, Sam. And I think everyone's really appreciative, like you say, joking aside, and all the work you do, mate. And yeah, just enjoyed it. I just love talking about football. So it's great. It was weird to see loads of fans. Like, I only know their Twitter handle, for example. Actually seeing them, like, awesome.
It's really weird when people are coming up to me and saying, yeah, you know, like, I'm Cockbeard. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like so many different users.
Which site's that, though, Sam, that you know them from?
Yeah, exactly. Let's not talk about Fab Swingers now, shall we? Neil. We were talking on last week's show about how amazing it is to be back at your spiritual home. Equally, an away day is brilliant. Nothing beats it.
No. I mean, they are... I've always preferred away games to home games. All of our greatest memories really have come from fantastic away days. So I like just going to other cities, seeing a pub, talking to their fans before and after the game. That was really interesting, you know, talking to some Notts Forest fans on the way out the ground about what they thought about our players, because it's always there, you only get to see them for one game, so it's really interesting. It's great just seeing familiar faces, like Tom was saying as well, because I occasionally do like a Tuesday night away at Rochdale or something, and there's a real diehard of like 140 yeah. people. And it, you know, and then over the years that's kind of grown, but they're still there as well. So it's that's brilliant fun.
It is. And I was saying on the pre-match show, Tom, to John Spark, I think, that the sort of motorways of the UK are like arteries, and football fans are the blood. And when you see them in the various service stations all sporting their shirts, it's almost a little bit tribal, isn't it? And there's a siege mentality when it comes to going to another city, and you get a bit of bravado, you're going around singing songs, not quite as loud as what you were in Nottingham at the weekend, but there's something really special about it. And how good was it to be back at an away day for you, mate?
Yeah, definitely, mate. Yeah, and like you say, you go to service stations. I remember going there, going, oh, who are they playing today? You know, you see a team, you think, oh, they must be playing, you know, and you're working it out and stuff. And it's, like you say, it's just great. And it feels, you know, even more so because we've missed it for so long. So, yeah, it was great, man. Same as Neil. I love going to new places, new pubs, speaking to new fans and stuff like that, getting different perception on things. And, yeah, it was really nice. And like I say, it felt like something brand new. It's like, oh, I forgot all about how great our away day is. And always helps that you go and win and put in a good performance as well.
Certain cities are better than others as well. Nottingham's a really good city to visit. It's not, I mean, when you get a crew, it's not so much fun, is it? But there's certain places that are just great. I tell you what you don't see as much of anymore is scarves flying out of cars. Do you remember you always used to get down the motorway and there'd be like scarves flying backwards out of cars? So maybe we should have a campaign to resurrect that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because we left just after the Bluebird coaches departed from Dean Court. So we passed a number of them on the way, and I was thinking, you know, I wish I had something sticking out the car just so people knew that we were Bournemouth fans. But yeah, absolutely loved it. And Neil, you're talking about the less savoury places like Crewe. Nottingham's high up on your list. Where else in the Championship can you recommend?
Blackpool is always a fantastic weekend, I think, or day out if you do them. Norwich is a great city for pubs. Obviously, they've gone up now, though, haven't they? So they're not around anymore.
Yeah, we've got them in the cup, actually. Yeah, of course we have. Yeah,
got them in the cup. So yeah, Norwich is great for pubs. So I just think just those sort of like big university drinking cities, you know, are great. So like Newcastle's fantastic, but Sunderland's crap. So it's just picking the big cities, I think.
So, Tom, we all know the story of your day because it's documented on the vlog, but we were in the Canalside pub, and a great little venue, actually, I've got to say. And at that point, the teams were announced and Ibsen Rossi was starting at the expense of Adam Smith. There were various murmurings that he might be missing out. So we were all thinking, OK, now this basically pivots on Jack Stacey's availability. He wasn't available either. So our defence looked very different, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And a real shame, because obviously knowing the kind of inexperience and youthful side we've got at the moment, you don't want to lose another one of your experienced heads in Smithy, which we did. We got two amazing right backs and they're both out. And you could have changed system and stuff, but I think it was just going to be whether he put Ibsen Rossi there or put Meps across there, which obviously he ended up doing. Apart from that, it was as expected, because we knew we didn't really have anyone coming back quite yet. You couldn't argue with it after the first performance. I think he would have gone unchanged if it weren't for Smithy. I was pleased for Ibsen Rossi to come into the side, because, you know, I wanted to see a bit more of him. Only seen a little bit of him, haven't we, in pre-season and stuff and the cup game, and he hadn't done anything wrong. So I was looking forward to it, but I thought that's difficult. You got whoever was playing there as a centre-half playing right-back, and it was always going to be evident, I felt. It always is evident when that happens, but... So obviously he went for Meps in the end at right back, probably just because he felt that he could do that job there. He probably has done it a couple of times in his career, and he's got that experience, and thought, you know, just do there and do a job for me, mate. And to be fair, he did.
Mm-hmm.
So, Neil, being a pod professional, you're sporting the same colours as our kit that we wore at the weekend. Now that you've seen it in the flesh, did it look any better or are you a bit unconvinced?
I love it. I've loved it from the minute it came out. I think the third kit should be something that grabs the attention of younger people and stands out. I can't stand it when you have two bog standard kits and then a third bog standard kit. What's the point? So, and I think it's, I love the colour. I think it's really creative. I'm not sure it's the greatest colour to pick up on a football pitch, but hence why Plymouth Argyle have always been in the bottom two divisions. But the, I think it's a fantastic kit.
Yeah, not bad at all. And look, we were talking about the amount of academy players we got on our side, Neil, but you can balance that up by saying, well, we've also got a number of players. It was about half and half, basically. We've got a number of players that we've paid a lot of money for as well. Forest's campaign didn't start particularly great with a loss at Coventry, but even pre-season it wasn't too good because a number of their pre-season friendlies were called off due to COVID. Yes, they did win in the Carabao Cup, but how are you feeling ahead of kickoff? Are you fairly optimistic about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think they got quite a good squad, Forest. I know that Chris Hughton was doing the standard, like we were saying that last week, that Scott Parker hasn't done, thank God, and moaning about, you know, how stretched he is and stuff like that. But they had, Lewis Grabban have made more appearances for Bournemouth, I read on the forum today, than any of our subs.
Yeah.
So, and probably more than four or five of the people that started. So you could say nine of the squad, he'd made more appearances for Bournemouth than. So I think it's amazing that we're getting the performances we are out of, you know, well, normally you can bring one or two kids in, but, you know, to bring four or five in, I just think it's incredible. And the longer they do this, the better, because we can use them as backup knowing that they're proven. And also we will get points on the board. So we won't have too big a gap when, you know, we sign players or players come in. What you don't want to be doing is starting 9 points behind the leaders. And we won't be now. So that's great.
Mm. And now we join top Tom on 4 points because no one else has actually got maximum points so far. But when Forest started the game, they threatened quite a lot and they had a pretty decent start. It was fairly frenetic. They had a free kick early doors. And then I seem to remember there was a Zinchenko that fired over the bar, I think, as well. It was a fairly worrying start. We were just sort of finding our feet in the early stages, weren't we?
Yeah, they come out of traps quite well for us. And we gave it. It felt like we just kept giving away free kicks. Mm. It just felt like it was just they'd come at us, they'd get a free kick, we'd get rid of it, they'd get a free kick again. And yeah, like you said, probably without them causing real problems, they definitely started better and we were finding our feet in the game. As you say, I think they were looking at kind of our fullbacks. You've got one inexperienced fullback and another one in Meps who's not a fullback. And I think they were looking at wide areas. And like I said, we were just bringing them down at times. But yeah, I thought it'd be a difficult game. I agree with what Neil was saying. We said earlier about speaking to other fans and that, they seemed so pessimistic before the game. Every Forest fan I spoke to, and I thought, I don't really understand it because, you know, like you say, Lewis Grabban sat on the bench, proven at this level. Then Carvalho on the bench, who scored two in the week. They can't be that bad. They're sat on the bench. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, and they did start well. But I thought we found our feet and without starting well, they didn't look like they were going to score. I felt we looked pretty comfortable and we were causing problems when we got the ball. We just needed to get a grip on the game, which fortunately we did quite quickly.
Brooks was involved in a number of our early chances, I've got to say. And the Forest fans, let's just talk about them. Neil, as crowds go at away days, how loud do you think they were?
It was difficult because I was right in the back row, so I had the roof over me, so I could really hear our fans. So incredibly loud because the noise was blocked in. They managed to belt out Mullough Kintyre, didn't they, at the beginning, like they always do. That was quite impressive. I think it's always the same with fans, isn't it? If you home fans don't tend to get into it unless things happen, and it wasn't really till they, you know, we'll come on and talk about them in the post just before half time. That was the first meaningful action for them, and then they were loud for a little bit. I think had they scored early. It's the rhythm of a stadium. We see it at Dean Court a lot, don't we? Where we take things for granted, sit on our hands a bit. They started loud, then they disappeared, and then they came back loud just before half time and just after half time.
Yeah, they did. So, Tom, explain the first 30 minutes then, because obviously it culminated in Brooks's goal opening the scoring on 28 minutes. But until then, there was quite a nice ebb and flow there in the game.
Yeah, we started getting a grip of it, I thought, and we started looking dangerous on the ball. Just some nice little interplay, I thought. I thought Dom Solanke was dropping into areas really well, really clever. And I thought Billing was then stretching them. And you started seeing an opening. We were targeting our right side with Brooksy. But then when it was going down the other side, I thought Zamora and Anthony were causing problems. And we just started getting a grip of it. And I thought, it's a really nice interplay. And I thought, when we're getting on the ball there, you can see how we're going to get in. It was just getting a bit more of a control of things, which we were just gradually doing as the half progressed. And like I said, really nice goal, wasn't it, from Brookshire's right foot, because I didn't expect him to even take it on, to be honest.
Yeah, and it started off on that side, didn't it? And it was a nice little 1-2 he played with Dom Solanke. And that's all his goals this season on his right foot, Neil. What's going on?
Well, maybe he's been working on it. But he's not as one-footed as some people. He's not like Andrew Sermon, is he, that literally had to pirouette to get the ball onto his left foot at any available opportunity. So he's a clever player, but obviously, you know, he will have been working at it. I'm not sure which leg he injured, because sometimes when you injure one leg, when you come back, you kick more with the other leg. So I might be totally wrong. It might have been his right leg that he did injure. But if it was his left leg, that might explain it as well. But he was superb. Dom Solanke, intelligent layoff back to him, burst of pace, smashed it across the keeper into the top corner. He'll be playing potentially for a move, won't he? So,
yeah, he will. That's right. That's right indeed. Now, I'm not too sure when this booking for Brooks happened. Was it before the goal, Tom, or afterwards in the first half?
Yeah, it was the first half, wasn't it? I feel like it might be before the goal.
I think it was before.
Yeah, it felt early, didn't it? It felt early. But yeah, without looking, I'm not sure. But it was definitely first half, like you say. And I feel like I mentioned earlier, we were giving away a lot of silly fouls. And I think him and Anthony did a few as well. It was almost trying to help their fullbacks, you know, target. I felt we were just trying to, you know, he was trying to help Meps, I felt, actually, to be fair, first half. Yeah. And he just got carried away and just caught him. And yeah, it was just a standard yellow card. I think Meps had just got one, actually, as well. So I think kind of that almost had a part to play as well. Brooks, he knows if he gets past me, he's running on Meps, who's out of position, on a yellow card.
Yeah.
So, but he was causing problems, wasn't he, Brooksy? I thought him, Billing and Solanke at times, little triangles and that, were really causing them problems. I think they had a debutant at left back, who's normally a right back, they were saying. So that won a good start for him. And I thought we really, you know, looked at that and really, Brooksy really made him pay a lot of the time. Yeah. Every time he looked up, he was caught out of position. Brooksy was just on him. And it's a real shame what ended up happening, because it was the first time I thought, oh, Brooksy's really coming into it here. So it was a shame what happened after half time.
He was doing it all on his own as well, because Meppham didn't attack. I dare say they will have said to Meppham, don't attack. But if you look at where the position Zamora was getting into from left back, I mean, if you did a heat map, Meppham would have been absolutely nowhere near that. He was playing like a centre-back just on the right, wasn't he? So Brooks, we had a little bit of help from Marcondes, because Billing tends to go on the left. But he really was doing all of that on his own. It was incredible performance until he was... You know, until we'll talk about what happened afterwards, but incredible.
I thought that was clever with Maps. That's a good point, Neil, because I thought probably obviously he's just chucked in there last minute and just thought, you know, do a job there for me. And like you say, I reckon he's probably said, don't worry too much about trying to be a right back, just go in the zone. But what we were doing really well was then we were shuffling across. So, like you say, it was like a three, and Zamora could get up the pitch then, but we weren't getting caught, because it was like we had a back three at times. I thought that was really cleverly done, and that was, you know, partly Maps, you know, being experienced, and also Scott Parker giving them the instructions, I guess.
Yeah.
So we had to throw, obviously, a number of the youth into this lineup, and Gavin Kilkenny was one of them. And I thought he had a very assured performance until that is the 39th minute, where he sort of dilly-dallied on the ball and they went through and got a strike in on goal, Tom. And I think for most of us, our hearts were in our mouths, because it's, you know, it's almost like a lick of paint was the difference. And sometimes people say that, but it really was this time. Close,
yeah, it was, eh? It was a decent strike, yeah. And I think... With Gav, you're going to get that. What I like about him, I said it in the first game, is how brave he was for a young lad. I remember Sermon, to a degree, used to get stick for losing the ball. I remember before that, Eunlo Kane used to get it a lot. But I love both of them players, because I love how brave they are. It's so easy, especially as a young player, to hide a little bit and think, you know, then I won't give an error away. I'll just hide and people will go, oh, he done all right. But he just wants the ball. And you do that in land areas of the pitch, you are going to lose it a few times. And what I like about him is when he does lose the ball, he keeps doing it. He doesn't, you know, it doesn't stop him. He doesn't shy away. But yeah, that was one of them. Probably give a bit of credit to Forrest. I thought they pressed him quite well in that moment. And like I say, the lad hit it really well, beat Travers, and fortunate for the post, one of them on it. We got lucky on that one. But he's only going to grow from that. You know, kind of what Neil mentioned earlier about the kind of youngsters playing and stuff, and we're getting the results. We're only going to get better. We're only going to get used to Scott Parker's system more. And these youngsters are only going to get better. So, you know, and when he's making these few little errors, at the moment we haven't been punished for him. And that's a crucial thing, and he'll learn from it.
Yeah.
Mm, absolutely. Now, when it did hit the inside of the post, it was one of those things where there were people's heads in front of me, so I couldn't see. So I was on my tippy toes trying to see, has it crossed the line or not? So when I just saw it come into my field of vision bottom left when it was going away, I was eternally thankful. It was Yates who had the shot. And like you say, it didn't stop Kilkenny playing in his usual way, because it would be easy to shut off and maybe be a bit more negative, but he wasn't. He still kept at it, and seems to be a trait of what, you know, Scott Parker seems to have sort of mentally instilled into some of the players, and seems to be looking really well. Now, at this point, Neil, we've talked a little bit about Zamora, a little bit about Anthony, but Ibson Rossi, the fact that we haven't mentioned him so far is probably a good thing, because he was so assured at the back, wasn't he? I thought he was really good.
Yeah, well, I said about Kilkenny last week, it was like he played 60 games. That's the biggest compliment you could pay him. And I'd say it's exactly the same about Ibson Rossi, because like with all kids, when they get in the side, you panic for them, don't you? It's like when you watch your own kids play football, you're just praying that they don't give it away or don't do anything stupid, which is ridiculous. So you think about Kilkenny's one, you know, there was a bloke next to me going, oh, this is what happens when you play kids. You think, well, hang on a minute, what central midfielder have we ever had? I can remember Lerma doing it for a couple of goals last year.
Yeah,
and he's as good as we've got. You play central midfield, you're going to get caught on the ball. It's going to happen, isn't it? So, but no, Ibson Rossi, I mean, he won a lot in the air. He was comfortable receiving it, like all our young players are, because I think, you know, they've had that bred into them. He came up through youth systems, didn't he, at Southampton and Brentford. So he's had good schooling in clubs that play football, and he just really comfortable. But yeah, I stopped worrying about him after about the 20th minute. Just thought he's fine. Let him, you know, I can worry about someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. So it approached half time and we managed to keep our clean sheet up to that. Now let's talk about half time, Tom, because that deserves a conversation on itself. Queuing absolutely ages for a beer.
I was.
You were, yeah, exactly. You were. You were there from, what, 5 minutes before halftime, and I think you got your beer at about 3:57. What made it worse was after queuing, it was a warm can of Carling.
Oh,
it was horrible, wasn't it? And it was actually a can of Carling that they poured out into the plastic beaker in front of us. It, you know, there wasn't any disguising it. It wasn't refrigerated. It was rank, wasn't it? Absolutely rough.
Oh, it was awful. We had a few good beers during the day, but yeah, that was one of them. Yeah, and like I say, just cans of Carling that weren't even in the fridge, and it was just, they were warm and horrible, weren't they? And and it took a while to queue for them as well, so that was disappointing. And then I ended up getting a steak pie, which ended up going over someone's head in front of me when we got our second goal, so I didn't even eat that. So it wasn't a successful half time, but. No, it was a shame, but I still love them half times when you're down there, there's loads of people singing and stuff like that. Yeah. Because when we were down there, we thought we were still winning for a while.
Yeah, we did.
I'll tell you what, so if you bought that pie at half time and it didn't go over anyone until we scored our second goal in like the 60th minute, you must be like on Slimming World or something, because I'd have had that gone by the time Forrest scored.
Hey, you don't get this figure for nothing, Neil.
But yeah, you're right, though. We were all sort of joining in with the chants downstairs in the concourse, and some lad just came up to us, didn't he, Tom, and said, "Yeah, do you know it's 1-1? I was like, "What? You're having a laugh? 1-1?" It's like you'd expect to hear something. Now I know that there were at like about 25 odd Bournemouth fans chanting "Glory, Glory, AFC Bournemouth" in the concourse, but that was not loud enough to drown out 25,000 Forest fans. But seemingly it was, because I didn't hear a peep. I wouldn't have known.
Didn't even know there was a chance or anything. I honestly didn't. It wasn't like you thought, oh, something happened there. Like literally nothing at all. And then that's why I didn't believe the guy. And then a few more people said it. And honestly, didn't have a clue they scored. But yeah, I guess we were just down there I guess you just don't hear it. But yeah, that was a real, real shame, because, you know, I was so confident and I thought, yeah, we'll be all right now. We'll just see this out. So that was a blow the way you never liked. We had a spell of doing that. I think it was in the Premier League, where I always felt like we conceded early in the second half. Mm. It was so frustrating, but because you feel it must be horrible for a manager. You know, he's probably, you know, given them all this talk, and then you go straight out there and concede, and think, oh, that's out the window. Yeah. But we recovered. That's the main thing.
Yeah. So, Neil, you may have seen the free kick. You may have seen the goal go in. You may have seen how it was given. What happened?
It was, I think, Brooks gave away the free kick. I think it was a softish free kick. Should it have been given? Shouldn't it have given? It's one of those that you get at home, I think. And then lo and behold, we concede to a headed goal at the far post. You know, to be fair, it's been a week since we have done that. So, but I think it's going to be engraved on my gravestone that 30 years of watching Bournemouth, I can't remember when we ever have been the successful aerial team at defending set pieces. But anyway, I'm sure there must have been one season. But yeah, so it was the classic guy, like strong curling ball into the back post. Despite the fact there was one of them and three of us, still got his head to it. Wondered whether Chavez could have got a firmer hand to it, or better keeper might have, you know, got to it. I might be being unfair on him. I'd like to see a replay from behind the goal, but that's what it looked like from where we were. But anyway, it was good header. You know, should have been marked better. Usual story.
Yeah, I've seen a few replays of the goal now. So it was Zinchenko who put in the free kick, and it was McKenna who got on the end of it. And when he headed the ball, he was actually sort of facing away from goal. And he's just got a flick off the back of his head. Now, there was Zamora there, there was Marcondes, and I think there was someone else, Lloyd Kelly maybe. And I felt like one of them should have got to the ball first. I mean, you know, they were goal side of him, but he just managed to get that flick. And I think Mark Travers's feet were just planted or set in the wrong way. And we know what it's like for a goalkeeper. Even if you do the slightest movement one way, it's very difficult to get back the other way. And maybe that was, you know, partially on his mind, but he didn't get to the ball. 1-1. Tom, can you lay the blame with anyone, or are you going to refuse to do that?
No, I don't think so. I think it's one of them. You know, like Neil said, it was just, I remember being a kid saying to my dad, why do we always concede from like corners? I guess, well, and that was, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when we were a lot worse aside. So, yeah, seems to be our thing. But, no, I think it's probably a lack of communication. Who was marking him? You know, I'm not sure. And I'm the same as Neil, really. Maybe a Begovic might have come out and got it. But I don't want to be too harsh on Travers. I think, you know, I do think we could probably do with a keeper. I didn't think he was great on the opening day. But I thought he was good during this game, especially in the latter parts when we needed him to stand up. He come out, punched a few later on in the game, caught a few. And stood up and was counted, you know, and that's what we needed. And he was good at time wasted as well. But yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to put anything on Travers. I actually thought we had a decent game.
Mm. Okay, so we'll move on to the Cherries' goal to make it 2-1 then. And David Brooks was part of it again, because one of the things that I've noticed recently, he seems to be coming inside more and he seems to have a lot of freedom, whereas previously he just seemed to be glued down that right-hand side. But he came across the pitch. And then I think he played it into Billing, who then put in Jaden Anthony. And once again, Jaden Anthony, perfectly timed ball, perfectly weighted. Philip Billing didn't even need to break stride. He carried on his run through, met the Jaden Anthony pass. And then from where I was, Neil, I was thinking it's going to be a ball square.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a shot from that angle, but somehow he managed to beat the keeper. Not sure if it went near post or through his legs, but, you know, delighted that it went in anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Forest fans I was talking to afterwards, that was their big criticism, was of their keeper. Just said that, you know, they were sat in the stand and had a really good view of it and said that it was just, so I guess it probably went near post and half underneath him. I mean, he hit it hard. Again, credit Jaden Anthony, because he's the king of that no-look pass into space behind a fullback, second week in a row. Billing hit it, you know, hit it like a bullet. So, whether, again, I think maybe a better keeper might have saved it, but we're not complaining.
No, we're not complaining. And Tom, what was your emotions when that went in? Beer flying everywhere. I got a load of liquid chucked on my back. Now, it probably wouldn't be beer because I'm not allowed to bring it in, right? But perhaps it was water or Coke, I'm not sure. But
I hope so, for your sake, mate.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so as well.
Yeah, and like I say, my pie went. The remaining, I had a bit of a pie left, fair bit, actually. And yeah, that went everywhere. But yeah, I was right. I was in a really good view of that because I was right at the front, actually. I was row B. Mm. And yeah, it was a weird one because I thought the same. He's just going to cut this back. And but it just seemed like it was shit. I mean, it probably, maybe the goalkeeper should do better, but it was just sheer power. And I think almost the goalkeeper probably thought what we did, that he's just
going to
shoot. Yeah. He's just going to put it across goal and maybe took that step expecting a ball across goal. But Yeah, Billing's in a nice bit of form. And like Neil said, another really good pass from Anthony, who actually, even though I know he was given man of the match last week when we thought he probably shouldn't have been, even though he had a good game, he was probably better in parts. Yes, I thought he was brilliant. And him and Zamora, you can see that understanding. They've played together a long time. You forget that. Yeah. And you can see that understanding developed a lot through the game and also defensively. But yeah, really good moment. Obviously, knowing what happens just after the goal, it was a good job we got it.
Yeah, it was 2 minutes after the goal, Neil. And things like that seem to always happen to Bournemouth. It's never simple, is it?
No, it was infuriating. Because when he tapped the player just before that, he and I wondered if he was going to get a second yellow then. But apparently it wasn't that bad a foul. But the referee went over and spoke to him. And clearly at that point, you know, as a player, you've been booked, you've been spoken to by the referee. You've either got to come off. And I think, to be fair, if Stanislas had been on the bench, maybe he would have come off. But he wasn't going to bring Sadie on for half an hour.
No.
So that doesn't help when you've got a threadbare squad. But you know that you just cannot do anything. And if he was going to commit one more foul in the game, it had to be one with 4 minutes to go when a guy was clean through on goal. That's the only time that would have been excusable. To tug someone's shirt just because they got round you 75 yards from goal. I mean, and Scott Parker gave it to him on the radio afterwards, which is, you know, which we're not used to because Eddie Howe would never have done that. But I thought, no, fair play, because he let a very young team down. It turns out he didn't let them down in the end, but we've still got to go without him on Wednesday. And he would have been our key player on Wednesday. Now we haven't got him. So, you know, Scott Parker's probably mad with him, not just for this game, but for the fact that he's already playing half a youth team. And now he's going to have to probably slot one more in on Wednesday. So he's let them down twice, but I'm sure he knows that.
It concerns me.
How, like Neil said, how far he was. I mean, the player was nowhere near. Like, he wasn't through on goal. Like you say, sometimes you go, he's got to do it. I mean, it looked like it was just pure frustration, like you say, that he'd been beaten. But and I genuinely think I reckon Parker's thinking in his head as well, I'll give him 10 minutes. Just be sensible for 10 minutes, and then I might have to freshen it up because, you know, they're going to target him on a yellow. And he couldn't, you know what I mean? He couldn't just get past the next 10 minutes without doing anything silly. Really frustrating. But like you say, Parker certainly.
Or even if he just mistimed a tackle, we'd still all be on here saying how dumb was he to put himself on the floor, throw himself, you know, go into a tackle. But a shirt tug is like a 12-year-old, like, petulant thing. It's just.
I used to say that about Harry Arter. I didn't mind when he used to get bookings for the late tackles. I used to think that's part of his game. But when he'd gob off at the ref and get his fifth suspension, a fifth booking of the season.
Yeah.
You don't need to do that, mate. Yeah, I think it was one of them, wasn't it? Really, just really frustrating. I think that's what Scott Parker was alluding to. It was just so silly. But Brooks will know that. And fortunately for him, the boys dug him out.
And what do you think of the fact that he dealt with it, Scott Parker, like he did, by publicly calling him out? Because like you say, Neil, it wouldn't have been something that Eddie did. Parker seems to praise players when they're due praise, but also berate them when they're due some criticism as well. Do you like that?
Yeah. Yes, I think so. I think this is such an extreme example that I think it is probably worth calling out. I think had, say, Zamora given the ball away twice for goals, I don't think he would have called him out on stuff like that. You know, where some managers do. You know, Jose Mourinho, as we know famously with Luke Shaw, he destroyed that poor lad, didn't he, for a whole season. So I think this was a really extreme example, and I think in a way maybe it's him saying to the squad what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, and letting the fans know what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So I wouldn't like to see him do it too often or for other reasons, because I think these things are best kept in-house. But I think this one was notable, so worth doing.
John Spark on the free-for-all outside the stadium, Tom, said that in a weird sort of way, he didn't mind and he was quite calm when it went to a 10. When we lost Brooks, because we played more compact. And, you know, Scott Parker's done that before. He's used to be able to do that. And to be fair, it didn't look like we were that much under the cosh. In fact, it was our academy players that, you know, combined to score a goal that wasn't to be. Zamora to Anthony, and it was Zamora that was offside, was it, Tom?
Yeah, I believe so. I think because he pulled it across, didn't he, Franley? I don't think there was any way Anthony could be offside. I think Zamora just didn't time his run quite right. But yeah, and yeah, we were lucky. We still caught. That was nice to still have that threat on the break, wasn't it? With that pace and you'd see a fullback bombing on in them areas when you're down to 10 men is promising. He's certainly got legs, hasn't he? But that's, to be fair, that's what you're going to get with a youthful side. You are going to have the legs.
Yeah.
And Zamora and Anthony certainly are two that show that. But yeah, and I know what I think you said, John said. I can see what you're saying. I mean, don't get me wrong, you never want to go down to 10 men. I certainly didn't want it at the time. But it does give you that thing of, right, we've just got to defend the lead. We've just got to defend the lead. Now, there's nothing about, oh, should we try? You know what you've got to do. And then the more the minutes tick away, and it also puts a lot of impetus on them. And suddenly the crowd are expecting them to score rather than thinking, oh, Bournemouth are a good side. They're thinking, no, we've got to now. We've got half hour against 10 men. Yeah. And it puts a bit of pressure on them. So I think away from home sometimes when you're leading, sometimes you can just get it done. And you all know your roles, don't you? You all know your jobs. And sometimes that can help. And backs to the wall stuff. And the boys certainly showed it. I was a bit concerned if they had got an early goal that with the youthfulness of our side, that it would have been hard to then even hang on to a draw. But, you know, the minutes tick away and you grow in confidence. And and like you say, that chance showed that we still had a bit of we still caused some problems on the break as well.
Tactically, Scott Parker did two things that were really, really clever that need calling out. The first thing he did was he spotted that Billing was getting a bit tired covering Zamora on the left, and he pulled Solanke across and played him as a left-sided striker with Marcondes as a right-sided striker, both of them very withdrawn. And that just put energy on the left because Dom did a really great shift up and down. And that meant that they had to keep trying to funnel the ball into the middle and then move it back out wide and cross it. So after a little while of watching them do that, he then moved to a back five and had three centre-backs. And our three centre-backs were all taller than Lewis Graben, and they haven't got a tall striker for us. So we managed to play them into a position where their only hope was to get the ball wide and loft it into the box when we had Mepham Kelly and Ibsen Rossi heading the ball away because Leif Davis came on and played it right back. So it was an absolute tactical masterclass. He twice changed it when they looked like they might have found a route through. Yeah. And it was, you know, you got to take your hat off and say, you know, we call managers out when they make mistakes. That was brilliant.
I remember saying very similar. I remember there was a guy next to me who was getting, you know, close them down when they were crossing it. And I was kind of saying the same thing. I was going, let them cross it. That's the best thing. We want them to just put balls in the box here because I've never seen grab them with header. And our three centre-halves are good in the air. I said, honestly, I know it's difficult, isn't it, as a fan. You keep seeing balls go in the box. But I was, like Neil said, I thought that was our best way we were going to get through the game is just them getting panicky and just launching balls in. And we dealt with that really well. And like you say, Scott Parker, I kept thinking he can't really change it. He's got no one that can play kind of that right side. But Leif Davis, and fair play to him, they said he's barely had a training session with the boys, left-footed. He come on. I thought in his short cameo, I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah.
So Bournemouth, wasn't it? Playing a left-sided player on the right-hand side and vice versa. We've all seen that before. But yeah, he did come on and, you know, nearly created a chance. Now, Neil mentioned a couple of players' names that we've barely even touched on. Solanke and Marcondes just then when he last spoke. Neil, probably fair to say that one had a better game than the other. Would you say that's right?
I think Solanke was better than Marcondes yesterday.
Yeah.
So Marcondes, he's had two brilliant games for us, and he was a little quieter yesterday, wasn't he? He did some neat things, but yeah, he wasn't as dominant. And they took him off. He looked a bit knackered. A lot of football in a week, I guess. Where Solanke didn't look a goal threat again, but everything else he did really, really well. Leif Davis got skipped down the right, put a wonderful ball in, and Solanke kind of threw himself at it, didn't he? And I didn't realise, so I watched it back on telly, he was actually very close. He was very close to it. It was a great ball in, and goodness knows where he'll play on Wednesday. Leif Davis might be up front.
Yeah, he could well be.
I think that's a good point. I was just going to say, Sam, we said about, because I really like Mike Condes, the early sides I've seen, but I think he's going to be the type of player that if we're leading a game, particularly if you're down to 10, but anyway, if we're leading the game, especially away from home, with kind of 20 minutes to go, he'll be the player that comes off because he's so good on the ball. He's such a creative player. He's such an intelligent player. But off the ball, that's not kind of his... I thought he'd done well against West Brom and stuff, and you keep on the pitch because he can make something happen. But I think it was the perfect game to kind of withdraw him, because I just think you're not going to get enough from him. That's not his role. But I still thought he was good again. But Dom Solanke, I thought Parker's singled him out, hadn't he? Which I was really pleased to see, because I know he's, I agree. I wish he would just put the ball in the net a few times to shut people up, because I'd love him to do that. But his work rate, and when he went to that left-hand side, and what I liked about him was him dropping off. And he's, I tell you what, Billing is reaping the rewards because he's so intelligent. I think it goes under the radar. I think some of his movement is superb. But yeah, just the shift and the way he helped out Jordan Zamora in the last kind of 15 minutes was exceptional. So I was really pleased Parker singled him out, because yeah, you're always going to be talked about goals, but we don't score a few of the goals early in these first two games of the season if it ain't for some of Solanke's movement, in my opinion.
Yeah, so Leif Davis came on, as you said, for Mokondas. Before that, Nottingham Forest made a couple of substitutions. I think it was Mighton came on for Lolly, but then Lewis Graben came on as well. You know, replacing Taylor is Lewis Graben. Boo! I mean, we're horrible, wouldn't we? Are we, Neil? Because if the score was 4-1, we'd be giving him a cheer. We are so fickle.
I don't think we ever really forgave him for the way he left us the first time. No. I didn't. And I know he came back, but he didn't come back out of charity. He came back because we offered him a whopping great paycheck. But when he left us the first time, he left us because we had no hope of going up, and he wanted to go to Norwich. He did have a hope of going up. So, you know, that he was pretty clear about that. So I don't think he was very popular on his second stay with us. He certainly didn't do anything on the pitch. So I think a lot of that is residue left from when he chose to go somewhere where he thought would have a better chance of promotion.
I'm too nice, aren't I? I stood up and clapped him. I did.
I genuinely did. Nice.
I agree with everything that, and don't get me wrong, 2 minutes later, I was, you know, singing, you know, have you ever seen Graben win the league? But yeah. I've always liked Grabs, to be fair. I do, everything Neil said's bang on. I always just look at him and think his goals in the first Championship season were exceptional. I think people forget how good he was in League One as well. Him and Pittman. And also, we probably wouldn't have got Callum Wilson if he hadn't have wanted more money and wanted to go to Norwich. So, I know he didn't want that. It wasn't him that made that happen, but really, thank God for that, because then we got Callum Wilson in. But I've never minded Grabs, and I've just always thought he's a bit of a goal machine, isn't he? And the biggest compliment I could pay him, I think I said it to you on the vlog, Sam, was that I was worried when he come on, because he's just terrible player and just nicked one. I remember as soon as he left, I think the first time we played him, he scored at Norwich against us. Yeah, you just feel like he could sniff something out, which once again goes back to Neil's point that Scott Parker, very clever again, moved Meppham in, went to free, and thought, don't want to give Graben any sort of room to just find a bit of movement and get on the end of something. So we kept him quiet, which is the main thing.
Yeah, on the whole, we did. I mean, earlier in the show, Tom, you were saying that, you know, we want them to cross it, but then we didn't deal with that free kick very well. But also, on 77 minutes, Graben, he stretched athletically, that's what afcb.co.uk called it. And look, we weren't sure whether it went over the line or not, but he managed to win the header and the flag went off for offside anyway. It went up. Whether it crossed the line, we're not too sure. But Forrest were applying some pressure and Graben was in that position. So he is a threat.
He was, but and people say a lot, don't they, when a goal is disallowed, they go, ball, if we're lucky there. I go, great line. Good defending. They're right. If he's offside, he's offside. The defence has done something right. That's why I think he's offside. So, yeah, if he was onside, he might not have got it. But, yeah, don't get me wrong. They were still putting a bit of pressure on. But I felt in the main, half an hour with 10 men away from home with the youthful side we had out, I felt we were dealing with things really well. And I'd rather them, what I was trying to say is I'd rather them cross it from deep and keep running at us and you know, think different things like that. So, I think we dealt with it in the main.
I think sometimes a youthful side helps in a position like that because they've got no fear, have they? So people always say that about kids. Like the young players playing for England in the European Championships, they all know that they've got another two World Cups and another two European Championships. Yeah. Fear comes when you're 32 and you realise this could be my last go at this, my last chance to get promotion. So if Zamora and Anthony carry on playing the way they are, they've got 14 or 15 years playing football in front of them. So I think they just carried on, you know, attacking, didn't they? There was a couple of times where I thought a more experienced player would have gone to the corner flag, and they were, you know, they were looking, still looking to score. And I think that's what you get with young players, isn't it? No fear.
So what if you're 35 then, Tom, and your name's Gary Cahill? Do you have fear then? Have you heard these rumours?
Yeah, I don't feel you have fear. You'd be looking for another decent coach. I'd hope it doesn't happen, to be honest. I mean, if he comes in, he's experienced, he's a good footballer. Gary Cahill, to be fair, he's pretty good last season and he's a good player. I'm not denying that at all. I don't like bringing in a player like that. I remember we done it with Distan. I feel like they're just looking for a last paycheck. Yeah. Bournemouth's a nice place to live. If they, he's going to be not going to be cheap on the wage bill at all. And so I wouldn't make sense when we're trying to trim the wage bill. So I hope it's just kind of paper talk, really, because I don't really see the sense in it. We've got Ibsen Rossi coming through. We've got Chris Meppen. We've got Lloyd Kelly. We've got Steve Cook. I don't get it. We need a striker. We could do with a winger. We need a goalkeeper. We don't really need a centre-half. If we were to bring him in, the only thing I think was Scott Parker's trying to bring in experience and he sees that Gary Cahill's available. That would be my only thing, as he thinks I could do with a bit of leadership, a bit more experience in this group, and Cahill's available. It would make no sense to me, really.
I'd do it if Cook was going, maybe.
Yeah.
But even then, I'd rather get Carter Cameron Vickers. I'm not sure how much experience we need. I think sometimes experience can be overrated. I think we're seeing that with some of the players that we've got playing at the moment. Maybe if Cook went, if you wanted a leader in the dressing room. But if Cook's staying, I don't. Why on earth would you have Cook and Cahill? Because they're not going to play them together, are you? So.
No, very true, very true. It seems that since these rumours have come out, it's sort of sparked again these rumours of Steve Cook leaving, but we've heard nothing to suggest that. And I think it's just people sort of adding two and two and making five. Yeah. So I don't think there's anything in that. But yeah, I'm probably along the same lines as you with regards to that, Tom. Towards the end of the game, we've talked about that Leif Davis squaring it to Solanke. Just before that, though, shot from Jaden Anthony that he just sort of pulled wide. I thought he probably could have done better with that shot. Do you think, Tom?
I mean, I was at the game and I can't even remember. I don't know. I kind of had an ams for a lot of it, defending it. But yeah, no, I vaguely remember what you mean. Yeah, he did drag it a little bit. But Jaden Anthony is he's so lively. He was still trying to make things happen, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that was Kilkenny's industry in the middle of the park. Who won it, and then he set him free. And then Jaden Anthony just pulled it wide. It was from about 25 yards, but I just felt as though he should have hit the target. But look, we managed to see the game out. Travers was fairly strong. He came out for crosses when he needed to. And Neil Dawson, we witnessed a Scott Parker masterclass, didn't we?
In terms of what? Clothes or?
Clothes, fashion, but also how to handle going down to 10 men when you've got half an hour left, which, to be fair, when you've got that amount of academy players on the pitch is no mean feat, is it?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, we talked through how he did it already, haven't we? So he did two very subtle swaps that changed the game every time Nottingham Forest looked like they changed the game. I think if anything, yesterday was his victory. Yeah. If you were to, we always have a player man of the match, but I think Scott Parker managed that team to victory yesterday. So, it augurs well because we had no opinion, did we, on Scott Parker? We weren't over disappointed. We weren't overexcited. We didn't know what to expect. And so having gone into it with no agenda whatsoever or thought of what would happen, I'm now in the impressed camp. But being a fickle football fan, that can all change in a week.
It can. And
I'm impressed.
We've got some difficult decisions. Well, not we, but Scott has got. It all depends on injuries, doesn't it? But if Birmingham City, we haven't lost there, but I don't know. It's I've got a horrible feeling about this one. I don't know why. Have you?
They look a bit better. They should be better, shouldn't they, Birmingham? Mm. I know they've strengthened. I think Boyer's doing all right there. They're on 4 points, same as us. I think they might be. It's going to be a difficult game. And like I said, but we know Brooks is out and we don't know what's going to happen. He's going to come in. I could see Stanislas being back for the game. We could have Smith back on the right side of midfield. We could have Stacey. I'm not sure he could play one of the youngsters there. I honestly don't know what's going to happen. We know Brooks is out though, don't we? But yeah, and I don't see loads of players coming back. I don't see him changing too much. But I still think we're a good side. And I'm still confident of going there and winning. I certainly wouldn't take a draw. But it's been a good start. Consider the players we've got out. And I'm on the same cab as Neil. I kind of thought, he's hyped up a bit. And he's got Parker. I don't know what he's like as a manager, to be honest. But early signs, I'm really impressed. Really impressed.
Birmingham will be our toughest test yet, I would say. My neighbour's a Birmingham City fan. I was talking to him over the fence this morning, getting a bit of lowdown ahead of this. And he was saying that since Bowyer's come in, they've lost three times only. Once was Watford away. and twice at the end of last season when he played all the kids because he wanted to see whether they were any good. They've not conceded a goal this year. He said they're looking tight as a drum at the back, just lacking a little bit of a spark up front. So, yeah, so he said it, you know, I think it'll be our toughest test. I suppose West Brom was a tough test, wasn't it? But I think this will be tougher than Forest.
There we go then. Really enjoyed that, Tom. Thanks very much for coming on. Any closing comments?
No, not really. Just that, yeah, it's good to have a feel-good factor around the place again, isn't it? Early days and see the youngsters and that. But yeah, just really nice to see. I think, you know, it's been tough for a while, hasn't it? Especially not going. And it's just nice to see two things, really. Players playing with heart. Love that. Mm. And also the intelligence of some of them players, I think, has been overlooked as well. I think, you know, it's easy to just be gutsy like we were in that second half, you know, with 10 men. We've also got to be quite shrewd and clever. And I think that's coming from the manager. And the players are showing on the pitch. So, yeah, really good. And looking forward to another away day on Wednesday, if you fancy it.
Why not? Why not? We'll be going. Will you be there, Neil?
I'll be there. Yeah, I will be there. I have a very short trip for me because I've got a house in the Midlands. So it's been a good week for me. Not too much travelling. So that's great. But no, my closing thoughts, you know, we don't look to win titles as Bournemouth fans. What we look for is honesty, endeavour and a team playing a little bit better than maybe they are individually when they're put together as a team. So we had years and years and years of that with Eddie not had it for a couple of years. Feels like we've got it back. So I think that's our natural spot where we're happiest.
Yeah. Very much so, very much so. Well, Tom, it's going to be a busy day for me and you because we'll be at the golf day in the morning trying to make sure that everyone's... So Harry Redknapp's going to be there, Matt Letiz, Tony Funnell, of course, Tony Pulis. It's going to be... So we're going to be like vlogging all that and then we're going to be going straight to St Andrews, pick up Tiggs on the way and should be a good away day. Maybe not an 8-0 day, but hopefully it will be another 3 points, fingers crossed.
Is Graeme Souness there as well, isn't he? Or not?
He should be, yes. I think there is a bit of conjecture about that, but if not, he will be replaced with someone of equal status. So yeah, we will make sure that happens. So yeah, going to be a good one. Looking forward to it. Tom, thanks very much, mate.
Cheers, boss.
Cheers, Neil. Thank you very much.
Cheerio.
Amazing, amazing. Great to be joined by the guys. So that was Neil Dawson, Tom Jordan and myself, Sam Davis, all jubilant after a 2-1 win. So look, we're making these podcasts really stripped down now. Previously, I would edit out visual references. So Neil Dawson at the start of the pod, he mentioned his attire. Our podcast show is exclusively on YouTube until the podcast release on a Monday morning. So on a Sunday night at 8, we've got our second look show. That's the same as what you're listening to now. So if you want to get involved, you can subscribe at youtube.com/AFCB podcast. But you know what? What it does, us doing it this way, it reduces the time it takes to put out a pod. But hopefully you can still benefit from what we like to think is fairly concise Cherry's opinion. Of course, I know we used to do the feature like Michael's match report and Do You Remember and the newsroom and all that kind of stuff. You know what? They had their time and they had their place. Maybe at some point in time when we're professionals at this thing, we can bring them back. But anyway, hope you enjoyed what you listened to today. If you want to leave a review for us, we'd really appreciate it. So if it's positive, then do it via iTunes or your podcast app where you can leave a review. If it's negative, email us first, yeah? Because we'd love to iron out the creases and see what we need to do better. So fans@afcbpodcast.com is the email address if you've got any suggestions for future pods. But look, have an amazing week. We'll see you at Birmingham. Really looking forward to another away game. Twice in what, 4 or 5 days, and then we're home against Blackpool. The next pod will be dropping after that Blackpool game, hopefully all smiles, and look, we may even be top of the league by then, you never know. Until then, thanks for listening to Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast.
Billing, left-hand side now. Anthony inside the left corner of the penalty. Plays it back to Phil Billing, who smashes it into the back of the net. And Phil Billing scores for the third successive game, right in front of those travelling Bournemouth fans who are loving their day out in the East Midlands so far. Billing, the Cherries goal machine. It's Forest 1, Cherries 2.